I hope you missed this. Welcome to the Layered Butter Podcast. My name is Raphael, and I'm here with my friends.
I am Jordan Sloggetz.
I'm Rodrigo Cockding.
And I'm Andrew Fry.
And yes, Andrew Fry, friend of the pod from a couple years now, ever since the beginning. And we're back for a very special episode to talk about the Oscars. Oscars 2023. Who's excited? Woohoo! No one. Okay, great. But all my friends are here, and we're going to talk about everything Oscars. And thank you guys for listening. Friends, thoughts, how are we doing? It's been a while.
It has been.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels like kind of exercising an old muscle that you haven't exercised in a while.
Damn.
We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. It does feel weird. It's good to be back talking into the air, having it be recorded, and then weirdly people listen to this, which is so weird to actually remember and think about. But which you, if you're listening to this, you should feel weird and bad, because this is, I don't know, podcasting is weird in general. So
it is nice to have Andrew Fry on this episode, because he's been on more Layered Butter Oscar episodes than I have at this point.
Damn,
he's been on all
right.
Three. I've only done two.
Yeah, it feels good.
Yeah,
to
Andrew,
be right,
I think
also. Nope, you go ahead, Jordan.
Sorry, I was gonna say, in some ways, you are like the Oscars when it comes to Layered Butter in audio form. So yeah, thank you for joining us. Please tell us how you're excited about talking about this
thank
year's
you
Oscars.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I am. I mean, it feels like we're such a long ways away or out from 2020 when I first joined, and being at the height of the pandemic and that ceremony compared to the one we saw on Sunday, it is giving me a little bit of, I don't know what sort of disassociation of where we are. But yeah, no, it feels great to be here. And thank you again for having me.
Maybe that's a good place to start. It felt like a return to form, eh?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
I was
going
to say, since like 2020, this is probably the most watched Oscars. I mean, in what, the last 3 years? So it's been like two ceremonies. But I think about 18 million people tuned in. On top of The Last of Us, that also the finale aired at the same time. So there's a lot of competition, but yet 18 million compared to last year's, I think, 12 million. So there's a lot more people watching, and I wonder why. Is it Jimmy Kimmel? No,
it's the slap. It's people felt left out when they didn't see the slap live. We did, because we're Oscars fans, but the majority of people saw it afterwards, and they tuned in to, I don't know, maybe it's going to repeat itself with some fun drama.
And also, ahead of the Oscars last year, we already knew that they were not going to put all the categories in the main part of the show.
Yeah,
it was feeling like a little weird. And like, you know, there was clips this year. All the main awards were
people also just didn't care, because people hadn't seen the movies, because people hadn't gone out to the movies, because like, a lot of people just didn't care. So,
well, we had
and it was
Cruise
a strong year this
that.
Year. It had both a mix of like the critically acclaimed and also like the blockbustery ones, right? Like Avatar, The Way of Water, and Top Gun, Maverick. Both are movies that have made $1 billion+, I believe.
Yeah, 100%. I think one of the biggest things too is the selection of films. You know what? I gotta say this. 2022 had a wonderful batch of films that came out that year, and it's particularly very strong because I think it had adhered to many different types of movie watchers, right? As Rod said, you got your blockbusters, Top Gun, Avatar. Was there a Marvel film that came out last year?
Black Panther,
Angela Bassett doing the thing.
Yeah. But you also got, you got Living that came out, which I still haven't seen, sorry.
It made me fall my eyes out.
Damn.
You know, to keep this on track with the so I think as listeners might remember from last year, I am the Oscars grouch. I don't really care about the Oscars as much as
Oscars
the other
grouch.
Three people that Oscars the grouch. But I am, and so I'm here to be the voice of move this along, you indulgent motherfuckers.
Usually this is like Rodrigo, but I'm okay with this. It's a welcome change.
I was going to say that something that we could talk about to get before we hop into the actual show is, who wasn't recognized at the awards, not even nominated? What were the snubs that you would have liked to have seen, like the movies that didn't get any recognition that
I have
about?
An answer to this question, but I feel like Raph deserves to say it.
What?
Oh, fair enough. Okay, I'll say it then. I think Decision to Leave is, like, to me, the
biggest. Oh, shit! Damn it. Yeah, you're right. 100%. Yeah, that's a big one. Sorry, what I was going to say was that the snubs were the people in the In Memoriam show and the main show.
Yo.
Tragic.
I don't know how many layers of approval the idea of scan a QR code to see the rest of the people deserving to be honored, like, went through to get to that final form.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that part really, like, it triggered me. I was like, what? And then at the end, I think I was texting Andrew Perucho, our Laird Better friend, and he was just like, oh, yeah, Charlie Bean? Oh, God.
Yeah.
Dean. Oh, God. from Triangle of Sadness was not in the main feature, but she's on the QR code. So that's kind of wild. That was my snub.
Yeah. But the QR code sort of followed throughout the whole ceremony. It was like every time there was a commercial break, it was always like, scan the QR code to find out about these nominees. Uh-huh. Scan the QR code to see this. Scan the QR code to see whether you're eligible for Paxlovid. But when
I will say that as someone who works in marketing, us marketers have gone extreme with our re-embracing the QR code.
Has had the renaissance of the pandemic. Like, nobody has had a second life like the QR code.
Very true. But yeah, so wait, did you guys say, so Decision to Leave was the biggest snub. Andrew, do you have any snubs that you, movies that you loved that you didn't get, that you didn't think got any recognition?
No. Not particularly that I think that I have seen over the, I mean, I'm sure that there are, but I just can't think of any right now. The one that just keeps coming top of mind, even though she never stood a chance, was Mia Goth and Pearl, because it was like the most audacious performance I had seen in like a mainstream film released this past year. But no, I mean, you know, they obviously have the Viola Davis, the Danielle Deadwyler from Till. I think Danielle Deadwyler from Till seems like the biggest snub of all of them, of especially the acting categories, because that performance was like extraordinary. And compared to a couple of other actresses who we will name later on, I just think that she was definitely a snub. So that's why I'd say that.
I would also add that I feel like, once again, the disrespect done to other type of genre movies, like, for example, Nope, not getting anything.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Palmer specifically.
Thank you for bringing up Nope is my big one that had like some cinematography moments, some even just some acting
visual
moments.
Effects.
Like, I mean, yeah, I guess I get some really really interesting and unique shots in that movie, like the. It's hard to talk about without spoiling, but the scene with a house at nighttime where something's happening to the house is incredible.
Yeah.
That's probably a good option for that. Yeah. I would have liked to have seen The Northman get nominated for something. I don't know what. Maybe if they had a
costumes text. Well, maybe
said this last year, but they should really get costumes would have been a good one. But if they need an Oscar for like best. Stunt work or something like that. And
Tom Cruise would win.
Well, yeah, he'd get the honorary and then he'd win it every other year. But
I would have even given it
to make Tom Cruise win something.
Nicole Kidman for best supporting actress for The Northman. When I saw people walked out of the theater after her scene because of just what she does in that scene.
You mean because they were like, well, you got to leave on a high note? The perfect
scene. I think they were like, you got to leave on a high note. They were also like, I can't believe she just proposed to fuck him before she was going to try and kill him. It's your son.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it was just a very intense performance. And I think I would have given her too.
The Batman did get some one or two nominations, right? Was there any?
No score. What the fuck?
Yeah.
that was my big one. There was no score. I think Roger Deakins also went on record on an interview and he said he thought Batman had the best cinematography of the year and that the Oscars were a little bit too. They like nominating films just because of who's behind it, right? Mm-hmm. And you know. They're very particular towards genre film, right? Mm-hmm. So and I agree with it, and I like seeing someone who's not necessarily an actor, like, you know, Roger Deakins is known for cinematography, and he went out to say, guys, like, even in our parts of the industry, like, I can name Aaron Sorkin even as a screenwriter, right? He might get a nomination whether or not his script is good just because of his name, right?
Yeah.
So something like that, you know, is a pretty big miss. I think Batman deserved a little bit more too. Original screenplay.
Aaron Sorkin still has that pull. because he's been throwing out crazy movie after.
He should stop being a director. He needs to just focus on the scripts, buddy.
Yeah,
that's my biggest. I think his writing still has that pull. Like,
did you like it?
Trial of Chicago Seven. No, I thought it was an abomination. But I'm being harsh. I mean, from its Comic Sans opening credits to the rest of the movie, I was, again, who I don't know who just said he should stop directing, but I think he should stop directing. Yeah, for sure.
100%. I think so. Jordan, what were you saying?
I don't remember. But that's a good segue to moving on to... Let's chat through. How do we want to do this? Do we want to go through award by award, and there was the big narratives of the night, right? Like, why don't we just say the big narratives of was Everything Everywhere All at Once going to be celebrated and awarded as a lot of people thought it should? Was there going to be some major upsets? And if any of our listeners didn't know what happened, Everything Everywhere went away with like huge amount of Oscars. It won
seven out of 11.
Including Best Picture and Best Director.
Eight.
Why don't we just say, how do we feel about that? Like, I was sort of classically liked the movie a lot, didn't love it. But I do like it a lot. Damn. Like, it's definitely a lot of the movie has stuck with me. I'm really glad it was nominated for Best Picture. I'm even happy it won Best Picture. Like, I liked some of the other movies more, but like, I'm totally happy for a weird, wonderful movie like Everything Everywhere to be celebrated on the highest stage of movie celebration. So I guess that's my take on it. But I know other members of other hosts here on the podcast were huge fans. So
if Fry's Everything Everywhere is Scream, we need to give this space to Rod because this is his Scream.
Yeah, I think I saw this movie as soon as it came out. I went and I saw, like, you know, I already had buzz from, was it South by Southwest or Sundance? I think it was South by Southwest, right? Anyways, I saw the buzz, and then I was like, oh, I saw the trailer. I was like, I need to see this movie. So as soon as it came out, I sneaked out of work. I went to see it alone. It was definitely like my version of the Scream experience. And when I came out, I remembered that I messaged everyone. And I have it right in front of me, which is why I'm pulling it up. And I said, if Everything Everywhere All at Once doesn't win the Oscar for Best Picture next year, then what is the point?
Damn.
And when we had our episode that focused on it, that you can go and listen to, that's like an entire episode just about this movie, I said, if the Oscars can't find a way to recognize this movie just because it came out in March and not in like the fall, like November Best Picture kind of space that they want to dedicate, then they need to rethink what their purpose is, because that is definitely like the type of movie that I thought should be recognized in that space. Now, in general, I have thoughts about like whether or not it matters if things win awards. Like, there's not like one movie worth watching last year's. There's so many. But I think for some spaces, like, I don't know that Michelle Yeoh is going to have this chance again to be recognized for her work, right? And again, another point that I made in that episode, that she doesn't just act her ass off. She does like martial arts. Like, it's such a complex role that not a lot of other people can do. And so if you ask yourself, could any other actress have pulled this off? Like, I come to the conclusion that I don't think so. Like, I think that is an incredibly unique Michelle Yeoh role, that it was picture perfect. So yeah, I mean, I was incredibly satisfied. I think, you know, I was like really rooting against my girl Kate Blanchett, even though she was amazing in Tar, but I just thought like, this is it, you know, this is her shot. I also felt similarly about Stephanie Hsu, and I think it's like unfortunate that here's the thing. I think Jamie Lee Curtis campaigning this hard is the reason also why Everything Everywhere All at Once was able to take that many awards, right? They come tied together. So I'm upset about Stephanie Hsu, but I think, you know, all overall, I was incredibly satisfied with what Everything Everywhere All at Once was able to take home.
Andrew, how about you, man?
What's your feelings on this movie? I feel the same way that Rod does, not necessarily to the same extent of love for it, but it does feel like it was the movie of the year, because it was the movie of the zeitgeist. And one of the things that I really look for in a Best Picture was, it's sort of the same, trying to think of other sort of Best Pictures, but where it captures the moment, it captures the critics, and then it captures the audience. And that to me feels like a Best Picture. And like, so even if you feel like another film feels more classically like a Best Picture or whatever it is, it felt like Everything Everywhere All at Once was the movie, you know, it was the movie that everyone was talking about. But I think your point, Rod, about Jamie Lee Curtis campaigning as hard as she did is the reason why I walked out with as many Oscars. My personal preference is I do not like that Jamie Lee won for this movie. I would have much rather her win for Halloween Ends than for Everything Everywhere okay. All at Once. And I choose to believe she won for that performance. But I think because, you know, Jamie Lee is always the loudest person in the room. And so I think she really walked this balancing act all campaign season of like recognizing that the movie was not about her, but also knowing that her voice would get it in the room more. And I think she should be applauded. And also I think that there is, yeah, it sucks that she needed to be the one that got it into the room pretty much. And campaigned as hard, but yeah, no, I'm happy. A happy one. I can't think of, I'm happy it wasn't Avatar Way of Water. I'll tell you that.
Damn.
Agreed. Yeah. On the Jamie Lee Curtis point, it is one category that is like, again, I'm really happy that she helped push this over the finish line for the team. But it's like the one category where any of the other four nominees, I would have been happier to see.
Yeah, than absolutely. Absolutely.
Hong Chow. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like Chow. Hong Chow, Stephanie Hsu, and Angela Bassett, her face was quite expressive of how she felt in that
moment. She did the thing in that moment.
Yeah.
So, okay, this is a weird, because, yeah, Happy Everything Everywhere won all the awards, but, like, I even within its own movie, Stephanie Hsu was so much of a better role. And I've seen the movie twice, yeah. And aside from, like, oh, the comedicness of like seeing Jamie Lee Curtis and being like, oh, look, it's her. And then some of her roles and her characters kind of over the top. Mm-hmm. I didn't think of it as like a tremendous performance. Like it.
Agreed. Yeah.
It was fine. It did what it was asked of it, but like.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyone could have played
role. Not to come out in defense now of Jamie Lee Curtis, but I will say that numerous people have come to me and later said, I didn't even know that was Jamie Lee Curtis. Like, her ability to disappear in this role, I will say, was absolute. There was a lot of stunt work involved, too, that she had to do. And once you get rid of, like, the comedic part where she's doing at the beginning, and in the third act, when she kind of has to have, like, these more honest conversations, there was some emotional work to be done there. Now, I still stand by my point that I feel like everybody else in that category did more than Jamie Lee Curtis, but it's also not giving me, like, you know, let's dismiss this entirely. I will say that this movie, I feel like, does not work without that conversation in the end between Michelle Yeoh and Stephanie Hsu. Like, I think if that does not land perfectly, the rest of the movie kind of falls apart. So I think we should have recognized Stephanie Hsu in this moment. But, you know, what can you do?
That is the movie, that conversation. I'm kind of,
Yeah, 100%.
I was going to stray away from Everything Everywhere for a quick second here, but I think it also has the most awarded, it's the most awarded film with three above the line or four above the line wins. So we got Best Actress Michelle Yeoh, Best Supporting Actor Kiwi Kwan, and Jamie Lee Curtis, but also Daniels, right? Daniels got Original Screenplay and Best Director. So that's the most, I think, wins of above the line.
Like five of the six
ones. Right? So,
sorry, can you, for someone who doesn't follow this exactly, what is
above the line seems to be this new category that we are now I guess it's always existed, but I've never seen it show up until this year when they have in theory won the most above the line Oscars, which is, I don't know which ones count. Is it screenplay, directors, and actors?
Yeah, I think so, because everything is all text. All texts are below the line, right? So you want to think of
like what is the line? Is this a poster thing? Like these people's names are above the line of the bottom of the text at the poster?
I would imagine that it's like in a newspaper where it's like where you would fold things and like the main things are in this side and then the other things are below the line.
It's also like the above the line are kind of the people facing, right? Those are the ones with, it sounds terrible, but I mean they have someone attached to that and they are the face of that movie, whereas the tech people are not. Oh my god, this sounds horrible. I feel horrible saying this, but that's really kind of the case.
But you're a tech person, right? Or were you not a tech person when you were?
I was below the line for all ADs out there. I am
reappropriate the narrative.
So is the idea that like because something like cinematography, obviously cinematographers can have a huge role, but they are also being directed by the director to accomplish that task, so they're just working in
I think in reality what it is that ultimately the biggest names attached to these awards are the ones that they refer to as above the line. So if you go on the Wikipedia page, they kind of sort it by best picture, director, screenplay, like all these ones are the main ones in quotation marks, right?
I wanted to quickly segue from our friends at Everything Everywhere. Well, I guess I'm even segueing back to Everything Everywhere. Kiwi Kwan, or the narratives, because there was a lot of narratives being built this award season with obviously Jamie Lee Curtis, right? But also Kiwi Kwan's entire campaign. His campaign was based on the fact that he disappeared for 30 years and his first role back was this, you know, the Daniels took a shot with him and now it's a killer performance. Mm-hmm. Also, when he won the Oscar, there was a shot of Weimin Wang, his character, like dying on one of the screens inside the theater, which was kind of hilarious.
Brief segue that those shots were like hilarious all night. There yeah. was the whale one where they were just showing.
Yeah, oh my god.
He was shaving
there was
himself.
Also when Sarah Polley yeah. won her award, it was Frances McDormand just staring just straight at her in the background, which was hilarious. But sorry, back to your point.
Wanted to get your opinion, friends, on the narratives that played. I know we talked about Jamie Lee Curtis. I know that, you know, she's been... It's like a legacy, right? She's been around for a long time. Brendan Fraser as well. Like, he had a similar storyline to Key, but with, you know, he was blacklisted and he was out of work for a long time. There was a lot of roles that he lost out to, but, you know, they all won, right? Michelle Yeoh was also the second person of color to win a Best Actress Award after Halle Berry, like 10 or... Exactly, right? So there are narratives that came into, I guess, fruition that night. Feels like Key and Fraser, Michelle Yeoh even.
I have a kind of dark negative take, so I will let you all speak first before I bring the room down to the Rodrigo emotions.
Well, I think to that point, I sort of, I don't know where you're going, Rod, but I sort of feel like the narratives are great, but now what? You know, we've got with Kiwi Kwan, it's like, mm-hmm. well, where are the offers going to come? I know he has a new Disney Plus show coming out, also with Michelle Yeoh, which is great. Yep. He got the Disney Marvel mm-hmm. money, which is fantastic. But I'm like, oh, so what's going to happen now? Like, he's riding this high, and I'm just worried Hollywood's just going to do exactly what they did to him last time. You know, pull him up to the pedestal, and then he'll just disappear again. So I hope that doesn't
agreed.
Happen.
And it's like,
you know,
all these people are in this room clapping and it's like, you are the people that closed these doors on them. Like, what are you recognizing here?
Exactly.
Right. So it's like, I don't know. I'm happy. Like all of them had a very upbeat, like this is the American dream. And I was like, is this the American dream to be shut out of it for 30 years and come back?
I rewatched Key's speech today. When he said that, the part of me went like, oh, there's a darkness to what you just said about this is the American dream.
Yeah.
Because like that seems like your brain has been warped to believe that this is the dream is. So I don't know. I think it is kind of dark.
So I would say amazing, much more important than whatever happened that night is what will happen in the next 5 years or so. Like what kind of work will these people be able to get? And similarly with Angela Bassett, to everybody that's like, oh, she deserved it or not. Okay, give her good roles. Like, look at her, IMDb.
Get them employed.
She's like playing Kiki Palmer's mom in Akeel and the Bee. Like, she deserves better than that.
Yeah.
I was going to say too, like, I read somewhere that Key was saying that every year he gets a Christmas gift from Steven Spielberg, but there was no job for 30 years.
Yeah, like, come on.
That's brutal, right?
That
and I was
brutal.
Like, yeah, you know what? That's much. But
I
think the narratives did come into play, though. Go ahead.
I found it interesting he didn't thank Steven Spielberg in his speech and didn't acknowledge him. I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And given that he was in the room too, I thought, oh, that's an interesting omission. I know that things go crazy. But hold on, just to go back to Jamie Lee for one quick second. Rewatching her winning, she saunters right past Michelle Yeoh when she's winning.
Oh.
And Michelle's trying to grab her arm to like hug her, and like Jamie Lee sort of like pushes the arm aside and just keeps walking to the stage.
Wow.
And I thought, I was like, it's interesting. Either she's still in her head or she's just like, I just want an Oscar and like, you know, whatever it is.
Sure.
But I found it interesting that she didn't run to hug Michelle after she kept saying Michelle Yeoh's the reason I'm here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And her speech was also kind of like, we all won an Oscar. It's like, okay, well, let me know what week I get to have that statue in my house and we will talk about it.
Exactly.
Jordan, what do you think about the what's it called, the narratives? How do you feel? Feels? No feels?
I'm only like my relationship to the narratives is just what floated in through, well, first off, the chat that I have with all of you, where you guys talk about the Oscars a lot leading up to it, and I just kind of chime in with, like, yeah, or every once in a while, something small. I do think that the narratives get, like, I know that this has always happened, but they get a little, like, out of control, and I know it's just social media creating way more opportunities for narratives to form. I am glad that, like, it seems like the right movie won overall, and in a lot of situations, like, I do wish The Fablemans, I feel like The Fablemans got a little bit robbed. It was a great movie, and I know it's not, like, it's more important for the stories that haven't been recognized to be recognized. But it, like, I've never saw All Quiet on the Western Front, so I can't speak to that. I don't know where exactly The Fableman should have been acknowledged, but...
I mean, it was hoping for Best Picture, Best Original Screenplay, Best Director, but it got nothing. And that's another thing, too. A lot of major films did not end up with anything. I think the most awarded film outside of Everything Everywhere is All Quiet, and then The Whale.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, right?
Yeah, like, I hadn't seen The Whale either, so I can't comment on that, but I did really like The Banshees of Inisherin, and had some, like, it feels like in that, any other movie, any other year, that movie would have walked away with just at least... Like
a screenplay felt like what it would have gotten.
It should have won screenplay.
Yeah, I think it should have won Best Original.
I think it should have. Sorry, Daniels. That's my only gripe. I was like, okay, you can take everything else, but give McDonough at least screenplay, because that was an amazing script. Every second was it landed hard. So, but I digress. I got to steal a little bit of spotlight. I'm sorry, spotlight here, because my boy Brendan Fraser won, and I've been all over this guy since, like, early childhood. Not this, but what's it called? What'd you guys feel? Thoughts? You like the performance? You like this win? Should it have been Austin Butler?
This movie or this performance? So I was like, I'm happy for him. I'm more happy for you, I guess, than for Brendan.
Yeah,
Fraser,
thank you.
I was happy for you too. I choose to believe he won it for Bedazzled. And The Whale. But no, I was happy for him to win. I mean, he was like an open wound in this film. And, like, it was like, I think that the emotions that he brought to it, but the movie was so miserable that I just found, like, I don't think Darren Aronofsky was the right person to direct it. He's too hard of a person. Mm-hmm. He brought, like, the style of Requiem for a Dream to this movie, and it was too tough. Much. It needed to be a softer touch, but I was happy for Brendan. And as Rod said, I was more happy for you when he won. I was like, well, you've been campaigning since September.
You guys are so nice. Thank you.
And you deserve it. You've been riding that Brendan wave since you saw it. And that's it.
I had to. Mm-hmm. I had to. And you know what? I think one thing that came out of it, too, is I was listening to the 824 podcast, and he was saying that, you know, he's currently not employed, so he has no gigs lined up, which is
that's, but, like, key too. He finished filming Everything Everywhere All at Once, and he had to reach out to the producer and be like, am I good in this, because I can get no jobs right now, like, I need some type of positive news.
I mean, I think he's in Loki. I know Fraser has Killers of the Flower Moon that's coming out this year, but, like,
R.I.P. Batgirl,
as we mentioned before. Yeah, seriously, that too. But I mean, I feel like a positive note was Brendan Fraser looks much better than he did prior to this campaign. Man was looking rough, and man, I think he was just not, you know, he was in a bad spot. And then after this, he's gotten better, and I hope he'll get, you know, jobs and he'll stay employed. Because I'm happy to see, you know, one of my former favorite actors. I mean, like, Rick O'Connell, like, come on, right? Mm-hmm. Back on screen. But anyway, I digress here.
No, it was
Little Mermaid. Sorry.
Wait, what's going on with Little Mermaid?
ADHD.
No, here's my thing. ABC is owned by Disney, so they had this entire segment on showing the Little Mermaid. It's never happened before. They're like, they don't promote a specific movie at the Oscars.
No.
It's supposed to be a celebration of all these movies. And then here comes Halle Bailey and Melissa McCarthy coming out to introduce a full trailer, which to me was horrible. But yeah, that's
I can't. You can't see a thing. What's with the cinematography of this movie? What is Rob Marshall thinking? I don't know. But yeah, it did feel very corporate overlordy. Like sort of like this is our movie, and you have to sit and watch this trailer. And it wasn't even the full trailer. It was like the minute and 53 seconds, and you had to scan the QR code to watch the full trailer. You know. So I don't know.
Yeah, it feels a little bit like something like the Video Game Awards would do, like that level of like corporate chilling kind of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe has no place.
Oh God, you just depressed me about the fact that the gaming industry has no Oscars and is not creating an Oscars.
Like their main award is like 3.5 hours out of 4 is just video game trailers for the next year. That is their main award.
Hmm. That's sad. I guess that would be for a separate video game episode, but just like, how does the gaming industry create all this fake bullshit and prestige that the Oscars have made over the last 95 years? They just got to get rid of all of the energy drink sponsors and, well, there's just a lot of bad history in gaming. Yeah. It forged in the heart of the 90s and the 80s and that toxic world. Anyway, sorry, before we jump off from Brendan Fraser, I just wanted to say, I did not see his performance because I have not seen The Whale. I did listen to most of the episode that he was on of the WTF podcast. And the only thing I want to say is that acting is insane. That man had just caught COVID before filming The Whale. He caught it in like January of 2020, like OG COVID.
Yeah.
But he said that he has caught COVID 4 times. And I just want to say we are still living in a pandemic. We don't know what COVID, what catching COVID 5 times is going to do to people. And like,
maybe the COVID czar on set is Tilda Swinton, who has said, to wear masks anymore. Also, like in parallel, there's an article where she's talking about how she has struggles like remembering lines because she has long COVID. Because
of long
COVID. Maybe it's because you don't wear a fucking mask, you know?
Well, I'm like, is she vaccinated? Is Brandon vaccinated? 5 times, like, that seems a bit much.
He said he was vaccinated and everything, but like, I mean, as we're finding out,
he's just walking into hotspots and be like, "I'm here, guys."
Fraser, Canadian.
He talked about this. He was born in he wasn't born in Canada. His parents were Canadian, so he was born with dual citizenship, even though he was born outside of.
So we're claiming him, is what we're saying.
Yes. He seemed to claim himself. He was happy
And Sarah Pauly. We won 2 Oscars.
He talked a lot about because him and Mark Maron were bonding over Canada, and he was saying about how like, oh, isn't it just nicer up there? You get off the plane and the air smells fresher and there's less anxiety in the air. And they were both kind of commiserating over the current state of America, which I guess I get. Yeah. But
I think he lives in like the outskirts of like New York, like in somewhere like Buffalo Land. I don't know, something like that. But not me saying Buffalo Land. Sorry to all
One more thing about The Whale. I do think it's interesting. I saw a tweet about this the other day that like the team spent like pretty much the whole campaign trying to say like Brendan isn't playing The Whale, and then the person doing the voiceover was like, the team took 15 hours to transform Brendan Fraser into The Whale, and it was shit, like that, all that campaigning,
his speech.
Yeah, I know.
Brendan's speech too was like dropping The Whale. Like, it's like, bro, this is like, and it's funny because any other year, like you take away like the fat suit that they put on Brendan Fraser, the conversation would be like, should this man be playing a queer person? But then like, it's so far outside of that at this point that.
Yeah.
Hey, also, Harvey Milk. I think I read somewhere that I think Brendan Fraser's character is like the 4th or the 3rd LGBTQ character to win an award.
Yeah,
like
character, dies in the movie. The Academy just loves it. That's more than Dallas gay Buyers Club.
Oh yeah! Oh my God! Yeah.
Yeah. I although totally no, about Matthew McConaughey's character wasn't gay in Dallas Buyers Club, which was a whole other argument.
Oh,
that year.
Correct. That was
yeah.
Jared Leto. Anyway. I wanted to do a quick chat about the musical performances, right? How did we feel about Lady Gaga's Hold My Hand?
Yeah.
Amazing. I will say that if you had asked me before the ceremony that I was like very underwhelmed by most of the songs that were nominated, but the performances actually elevated it, I feel.
I agree.
Like, like Lady Gaga, I've seen her perform that song live at the Sky Dome.
What? She performed it?
Yeah. And I was like impressed, even though I didn't like it when I heard it on the radio single. And then not this man eating while we're recording.
Oh shit!
And then Rihanna, also her version of that like boring ass song from Black Panther was also better than like
the incredible radio version.
So I was pleasantly surprised.
But it was boring. I mean that song. I mean it's.
I mean I was pretty.
What's your take on the songs? Sorry. I was gonna ask. Like, did you? What performance was your favorite?
It was Hold My Hand. I that caught me off guard. It was like super stripped down, and I, you know, for whatever reason, I thought it would be like over the top, lights everywhere, you know, very very cinematic and dramatic. But she was not really supposed to perform until, I think that day they announced that she was actually going to perform. And whether or not this was intentional, and the fact that it like there was nothing on the set, I loved it. It was the best performance. Not to. I mean, it's a banger of a song, but Hold My Hand took it from me. So, yeah. Andrew, you were going to say something?
I completely agree. I mean, I was pretty inebriated by that point of the night. I don't know if you noticed, but I completely dropped out of the chat.
Oh, yeah,
I was
like, you were gone. You were gone like, out of the chat.
We were like, where is he? But by that point, I mean, I think, and a friend of mine was saying over dinner that I think Tom Cruise called Gaga on the day of the Oscars. He was like, you need to go because I'm not going. And so you need to go and be there and called in a favor because it was so stripped down. But because it was so stripped down, you really felt the lyrics and you really felt what she was going at and what she was saying and singing. And it was definitely the best performance of the night. Like, I was pretty much in tears by the end of it. It was beautiful. But the Natu Natu performance was also excellent. And so
South Asian actors, though.
I was going to say in the beginning, they had a bit about how it's like, if you go too long, you will be played off by like the Natu Natu dancers. And I was like, there's not a brown person in this.
No, I think there was an article that came out that there was none or they were in brown face. Don't know. Don't quote me on that. But
did you just make up fake news?
No, I don't know. I mean, let me look for this. Okay. Oh God. But, I remember reading it that, apparently that segment did not have any South Asian actors or dancers.
God.
But there was a couple of dancers there that looked similar because of their outfits. Right. And I think their hair and makeup kind of resembled the main characters. I don't know.
Right? Sorry. You're talking about the Natu Natu performance, right?
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Correct. Wow. I have to look back and read. Wild, though. Wild.
I do think that you should have to show some receipts after that accusation.
It
wouldn't surprise me. But... it's like, I think the theme...
not this!
The theme of Hollywood is this performative kind of, like, inclusion, right? Like, it's like, oh, we should nominate, I don't know, black actresses to the best actor category or so on. And all of a sudden it's like, what you really should do is be offering them better work throughout the rest of the year, right? Like, it's not at this point when we're recognizing that you should be focused on it. And it wouldn't surprise me to say, like, oh, we have this, like, Bollywood number and then, like, fill it with non-South Asian people, right? Like, it's just, it's more of the same always with them.
So I'm reading a couple of articles I just Googled, and there's a couple of news articles saying that, there did not include Indian dancers.
That's absolutely wild.
I am being attacked by ad blockers, my ad block, but out of the 20 dancers on stage, none seem to be of South Asian descent.
Right. So the Oscars should be absolutely ashamed of themselves for
that's crazy. In the Oscars rendition, the two leads were played by American Jason Glover and Canadian Billy Mustafa, who are made to look like the main characters of the movie despite not being South Indian. That is crazy.
Oh God.
So wait, they're not unreal. Like Canadians of South Asian descent. They're just not South Asian at all, or like.
I'm just reading.
I mean, even if those two were, like, you could tell looking at that group of dancers that it's like the majority of these people are just like LA dancers that they've hired. They do Bollywood dance.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. But that's kind of wild, right?
How do we move on from that?
I thought I don't know. Like, I'm even struggling to find the receipts. But I found But I found them, and that's kind of wild to see, right? Because, I mean, going into the Oscars, I had a feeling that Natu Natu would win. It's probably the biggest one. It swept all of the awards for Best Original Song.
Did you think it would win Best International?
Yeah, but I don't. I think India didn't nominate it for political reasons, I think. They nominated another film, but it would definitely, I think, easily win.
So you think if it would have been nominated, it would have won?
I think so.
Overall, I honestly do not think so. I think like the BAFTAs pushed this All Quiet on the Western Front momentum all the way that nothing was going to be able to.
Well, also, I don't think the BAFTAs would let RRR win because of the fact that it is against the former British colony,
and so
exactly right.
Yeah,
yeah, and they are depicted like major villains in like the most incredible way. Yeah, yeah.
So putting aside, I guess, Jamie Lee Curtis that we've discussed a little bit, were there any categories where you were surprised, or was everything kind of as you expected?
I'm looking back and seeing the tech categories, right? Trying to think here. Best film editing, Everything Everywhere.
This is...
You and I have had this conversation, Raph, where I said...
I'm not disagreeing. I'm not disagreeing. I just said, oh, yeah, that's one.
not talking about, like, whether it deserved or not, but I'm just saying, like, I do remember that you said that Top Gun was going to win. And
I thought so, too. Yep, I remember. Yeah. So you're just rubbing that in my face now. Okay, copy.
I want to take the victory lap on that
one. Guys, no Elvis. Elvis was shut out. Best sound, best costumes. I mean, obviously, best actor.
So I'm Baz Luhrmann. Very happy about that because that movie was dumpster fire. So...
Yeah.
Damn. I also just realized that Baz's wife is the costume designer for his films.
Oh, wow. And
she
was
she dresses like she's a costume designer.
Yeah.
If that movie, if it deserved anything, costume design is something it could have walked away with. Mm-hmm. How do we feel about, so I know we've already sort of been talking about The Whale and some of the controversies with that movie, but like best makeup and hairstyling when it's like, I don't know. We know Hollywood can do fat suits.
A fat suit? Like, yeah, like three of the four nominations were fat suits.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, yeah.
Oh, shoot, you're right. Yeah,
the Batman was and for Elvis. The Colin Farrell, and then Elvis was for Austin Butler.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not Austin Butler, Tom Hanks.
At the very least, you could say Elvis, I was going to say, because there's... hairstyling. There was a lot of hairstyling in that movie and makeup in that. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Although it did have the fat suit. Like, is it? But yeah, it seems annoying. It seems like in the same way that people and we complain about a lot of the Oscars Academy, a lot of the Oscars categories being not the most distinguished work of art in that category, but just the most obvious. So, you know, like, score becomes like, what was the most bombastic score? Acting is like, what's the loudest, most performance?
Also,
editing score? Is the most editing. So, like,
when
Babylon losing for score,
I know,
kind of messed me up.
I will say that every time, but at the same time they played that All Quiet on the Western Front score, though, I was the meme of the cigarette. I was like, I need a cigarette right now every time they play this score. I love that score, but I also agree that Babylon's was the score of the year. Yeah,
come on, man.
I just like that, you know, Justin Hurwitz was going into this in a way where it's like, can this man lose this award? And now you know what I mean? Like, I think next time he's up there, it's going to be at least interesting. It's not going to be like, oh, he's probably going to win.
Yeah.
I just saw, John Williams, the oldest Oscar nominee at 90 years old, again, for The Fabelmans. He'll probably get a nomination next year for Indiana Jones, but let's see what happens.
Will he? I guess it depends how much original music there is, or if it's just, you know.
He's doing the score, so I'm going to assume there's going to be some original pieces on it, but...
find that there was a lot of that age talk at the Oscars, which is... It's just weird, and maybe those are the sorts of... Like, when I think about, like, what are the things that we're trying to be very progressive about now that... 50 years from now, people will look back, right? Like eating meat or any of the other awful things that we do as a society that we're blind to. And I think some of our weird talk about age and ageism is going to fall into that just because that, like, I don't know. Sometimes it felt like it was verging on the territory of like, so old, like this person's probably not going to be here too much longer. Like 91 years old.
Also, and it's like, made a joke about him still having sex at 91. And it was like, it just seems a little weird. I know it's like a joke, but yeah, it felt strange. I agree with you on that part.
How did we feel about the hosting duties overall?
Buddy, that joke he cut off a documentary filmmaker, someone from doing their speech, and then went to Malala to make a joke about, oh my God, what was it? It was so bad. Like, that is gnarly, man.
And he
like,
called no her way. Malala Land. He said, ladies and gentlemen, Malala Land. Like, come so on.
God, that's horrible. You got a Nobel Peace Prize winner hanging out here promoting her movie, and then you get a joke made out of it. It's brutal.
Yeah.
I did not find any of the jokes funny. I found it cringe inducing. There was a couple of references to this slap that were just kind of in there. It's like there's no incident yet. I think at the end of the show he walks out and then he puts that little sign that says 1 year without an incident, right? But yeah, I mean, it wasn't anything special. I mean, bring on the Muppets. That's what I say. I just want the Muppets to make things interesting. But
I think Jimmy Kimmel is a safe choice. And I think, like, I don't think he's ever going to win, like, an award for his hosting things. But he's, has an ability to. I do agree that the Malala, like, that segment was, like, DOA. But for the most part, it's, like, kind of moving things along and, like, just carrying on with, like, what is otherwise a kind of, like, you know, non-descriptive hosting duty.
You're right. He feels like the kind of celebrity that where, like, that's his primary thing. Like, in the same way that, like, a professional MC who's been hired to do, like, a wedding, we're like, yeah, this person is just fairly likable, charismatic, gets on with the show, and doesn't cause any issues.
Yeah.
It was okay. I mean, I don't know.
I guess like it didn't have the highs.
He mocked Tom Cruise. That was fun.
Oh, yeah,
that
hurt. There was quite a bit of mocking of the people who didn't show up, I guess. And
I heard that Tom Cruise didn't show up because he didn't want to see Nicole Kidman.
Was that it? I thought he was gonna get a joke about Scientology, and then he's just like, "I'm out of here." Probably.
Can we
Shelley McGavage?
I still do want to know, like, where are these rumors coming from? Like, is that like a Twitter?
Twitter, buddy. I mean, no. I don't know. I wasn't there, but it's
the
like...
Nicole Kidman one was Page Six. Page Six reported that Tom Cruise didn't show up because of Nicole Kidman. But so we have to take that as with a grain of salt. Mm-hmm. But
are they not like on speaking terms?
I take Dumois gossip sometimes as gospel because Raph sends it to me at like 7 a.m.
While we're talking gossip, what was the Kate? Kate Blanchett,
her driver disappeared. On her what was he doing? Like gambling or something?
He gambled and got into a fight, and then she didn't have her ride to change. She was in the after party wearing the same dress,
which is kind of unfortunate because I did not love her dress. Like the first time that she had to wear it, like at two events, I was like,
I was surprised that she didn't show up looking more like Lydia Tarr. I would have thought she would have shown up with sort of like this.
that would have been awesome.
She would have pulled a Sarah Polley, which does lead me back to the original question that someone was asking about surprises. I was genuinely surprised Women Talking won. I wanted it to win.
Really?
But I thought that was going to be All Quiet. I thought All Quiet was going to take Best Adapted.
Oh no.
But I was thrilled that it was Women Talking.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I'm disappointed that the only Oscar it walked away from, and even nominated for, aside from Best Picture, was Best Adapted.
Yeah,
I'm happy she won something.
It's wild that they didn't get a single Best Supporting Actress.
That is Women Talking. Boom.
I know.
Ben Whishaw too. Oh my God.
They all canceled each other out. That's the unfortunate part. They all just went, well, how can we nominate one over the other? Because this is why I think the Oscars should maybe start considering something like a Best Ensemble, like trying to do like a SAG sort of thing where we have the acting categories, but we also try and find, you know, like something like Glass Onion. Like there was, that was a whole ensemble where that could have been nominated you know? So I don't know.
I know I said this last year, but I think the four like separated acting categories have to have a time limit. Like, an expiry date. Like splitting it into the two genders, like that's gonna get complicated when a non-binary person is nominated for something. And then
think, what is the current rule? Do we know? Like, do they put themselves in the category that they prefer, or do they just get excluded entirely?
I think. Oh, I don't know. That's a great question.
I have no idea.
Don't know.
Did we any opinions on the Canadian Turning Red not winning Best Animated. I don't think it was the best animated.
Listen,
but I loved that category. Like, I think all five of those movies are excellent. Like, my biggest gripe would have perhaps been if Marcel the Shell with Shoes On won.
Because it's not animated?
Not necessarily because, I mean, it's a movie that I love, but it just feels like in terms of recognizing Best Animated Feature Film, that there's less animation happening in that feature
film.
Yeah,
I agree.
But it's still a good... Like, I would have been happy with any of the winners. I do think, like, my choice would have been Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. Like, I think that it was the best one.
Del Toro was already standing up at the wings, ready to go. He was like, yep, I'm next. Like, buddy.
I guess it is... But much. It is good for the art form that stop motion continues to get awarded and recognized. It feels like, though, if Marcel is eligible, then Avatar probably should have been eligible. And now we're going to get into really weird territory about... No, just, well... Avatar did win Best Special Effects, right?
Which
it
is
did.
What
it did. Yes,
it did.
Yeah,
definitely deserve that award.
It has more Oscars than The Fabelmans and Banshees of Inisherin.
That's
crazy.
But also, it's like that's a statistic that makes you think something that's not reflected in reality. As in, like, for example, I'm sure there's like Marvel movies that have more Oscars because they have a costume or whatever, like Black Panther. So it's like that. That's, you know what I mean? Like, it's a real statistic, but it gives you a fake impression.
Well, Suicide Squad has more than The Fablemans and Banshees of Inisherin. Yeah. So
that is unbelievable.
How do we feel about them not having Flash entering the Flash Force or whatever it was last year that they did equivalent moment? Are we happy that they got rid of that kind of thing?
Wait, what? What are you saying?
Remember last year
at the Oscars? Do you not remember?
Yeah.
What happened?
Raph has blocked this out of his memory. They had this awkward, awful segment where the Flash,
like, Twitter poll kind of.
It was like the top movie.
Yeah, I erased that from my memory.
But just them even having to show the four or five clips were like, what is this insanity that you have given to us?
Though, I mean, I feel like this was one of the only Oscars I've seen in a long time where they showed a ton of clips. Yeah. And they were not shortened, because usually if a show goes long, they cut in the latter half, right? Mm-hmm. But they kept every acting clip. I know it's like 15 seconds, but they had clips. They had montages. They had stuff to introduce the best pictures.
Yeah, that went a long
way. This is the stuff I love.
The clips are the stuff I love.
Right? Because you'll have people watching the Oscars just because of the Oscars, but they haven't seen X movie or I haven't seen this, and it's nice to see, oh, wow, that was pretty good. Maybe I should go see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, again, celebration of movies. I'm all for them, the clips. So,
in terms of awkward usage of editing in clips, I thought that some of the... some of the editing in the music section for the performance for the Everything Everywhere song was very wacky, very wild delivery of the song.
Of course.
But part of it made me think, like, oh, if you haven't seen this movie, or if you did and you didn't like it, this is bringing upon some of the most cringy aspects of millennial humor, like the LOL so random, which I get it. I'm a millennial. I love it. I love the movie. I love the Daniel sense of humor. But, like, I can see that. I can see our generation becoming outdated and how that probably really makes Gen Z people squirm with, like, oh, God, this is...
Oh, so you think it makes Gen Z people scream? I thought you meant like it makes like older people like...
I think the older people are now just like they've been too inundated with like LOL so random that they're just like, well, I don't get it, but I understand that that's cool. But now there's a younger generation who are like, this is the chewiest thing I've ever seen. Like, this is...
Not the dropping of casually.
You know, like millennial cringe or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was properly used, but I'm also an old man, so maybe I'm wrong.
But you know, looking back on it, I think it's been a pretty good year for movies, and I'm pretty glad that we had, you know, a really great show to celebrate it all. If we had to change anything, if there was a film that you thought should have been in this celebration of film, what would it be and for what? Rod, I'll start with you.
Decision to Leave. I think Decision to Leave deserved to be in the Best Picture conversation.
Yeah.
It should have definitely been nominated for a variety of other things.
Yeah.
It feels like, you know, we were like giving ourselves a pat on the back for nominating Parasite, and then we've gone back to mostly Hollywood movies shortly after. I mean, mind you, All Quiet on the Western Front was also nominated. Was that the only one? Oh, Triangle of Sadness, I guess. Both of them are international features. But it just felt like both in terms of critical reception and just technical ability. Like, it feels like Decision to Leave should have been recognized, and it's very weird that it wasn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. How about you, Andrew?
I'm just looking through to see whether there was a movie that I watched that I'm like, oh, this should have been in it.
Scream 5.
Well, yes. I mean, we want to be a little realistic here. But yeah, I mean, so let's talk about that. I would definitely, genre films should have been more included. Yeah. Should, you know, as you were talking.
Pearl earlier, X.
Pearl X. Yeah, I mean, something like X and Pearl is kind of wild that, you know, those two movies were released this past year. And for the sheer audacious quality and nature of them, I feel like they should have been recognized somewhere other than like the Saturn Awards. Not to disrespect the Saturn Awards, but you know, we need to elevate the genre a bit more. But yeah,
everywhere getting in there is a real win for weird genre movies and like out there performances getting recognition. So maybe in the next couple of years, we'll see some of the big first. Sci-fi horror, Dune 2. Yes. Could we get a nomination for Dune 2 for something?
Yes.
I would say yes and no, because I will say Everything Everywhere All at Once still feels like a critical darling in a way that a lot of other movies that are like enjoyed by mass populations but are not of like the main drama are never given kind of like the same equal footing.
Yeah, that's fair.
Agreed. Yeah.
Jordan, was there anything you were missing?
We talked about it at the beginning. I'm going to say nope. I'm going to say and maybe even like production design, best sound, like just best sound in general. I find that Top Gun won, but a nomination would have been nice for that movie. But I know Nope was pretty divisive with a lot of people who watched it.
My pick is Decision to Leave, but I would also say Babylon should have gotten a little bit more. I know it's kind of wild. Rodrigo, I saw that side eye. But production design, even Margot Robbie, right? I don't think Damien Chazelle's I don't think Damien Chazelle is a failure. I think this film is just misunderstood.
I agree with you on that, but I disagree wholeheartedly about Margot Robbie, and I'm going to drop a hot bomb on this hot take. Babylon would have probably been a complete masterpiece and probably nominated in every single category if Emma Stone had kept in the role and if she hadn't have dropped out.
Whoa. Emma Stone was going to be the original
role. That role was written for her and then she dropped out because Emma Stone is very picky. And I think she may have, I don't know what she decided to do instead, but I was watching it going, wow, this role was so made for her. And Margot Robbie is great, but she is trying too hard to be fucked up. Whereas Emma Stone would have been completely fucked up in that role and would have brought that sort of raw energy that I think Margot was. It feels weird for me to say because I'm a man, but I think, and I'm gay, but Margot Robbie just felt too conventionally attractive for the role. And I think that Emma Stone would have brought that sort of, she's got that sort of feral quality and strange, which is why I think she's leaning more towards like Yorgos Lanthimos type roles in movies where she's able to.
Sure.
Sort of fly her freak flag more and be strange and make strange choices, which is what that role in I think Babylon was asking for. And Margot, well, great. Don't get me wrong. And it's just my opinion about it. I just felt that she was keeping the movie back from being what it could have been.
I'm shook. I did not expect this. I did not expect this. But Any last thoughts? I wanted to say maybe sometime next year when we hopefully come back for another episode and we go through the Oscars again, we're going to see like Jesse Plemons on stage. We're going to see Emma Stone on stage. We're going to see a lot of our favorite actors up there.
Yeah, Raph, I'm really glad you're bringing this up already. Let's close this out with predictions for next year. Let's lay our stake.
Yorgos. Andrew brought this up.
It's going to be the backlash to the backlash, and that we have been recognizing too many people of color films, and it's going to be the whitest option among whatever it is. I particularly think it's probably going to be Martin Scorsese, like
Killers of Flower Moon. Like,
oh yeah, Killers.
Cinema reward.
And let's not forget what's his face, Oppenheimer. Nolan,
oh please God no!
I don't see it for Nolan.
I see best actor though, nomination at least. Mm-hmm. A Barbie.
I think he'll get nominations. I just don't think I can't see wins in his future.
I do hope that it's a tremendous night for Barbie next Academy Awards because I'm already building the narrative in my mind that like,
what if it flops? What if it's terrible? There's no way it's going to be.
We move on.
I'll be very surprised if it's terrible. If it flops, I wouldn't be that surprised because it is, you know, it's not. Like, Oppenheimer is going to bring in the dads. I don't know if Barbie is going to necessarily connect.
The cinephiles.
Yeah, Barbie's going to be the cinephiles, but is it going to connect to the wider audience? I don't know.
I don't know. I think, who are you going to say?
I was going to say Joaquin Phoenix for Ari Aster's new movie, Beau is Afraid. That could be a genre, you know, right. I don't know.
That's a good one. The trailer for that looks like it's asking a lot from him, and he's going to be doing a lot, especially in the terms of makeup. That might be a really good makeup contender because it's not just, you know, it's age makeup throughout someone's life. Yeah, it's not just you know, the celebration of fat suits.
Best actor next year, Colman Domingo Rustin. Directed by the guy who did Mulaney's Black Bottom. I think he plays Rustin, who is a... I think he is... Oh, God. Not this. Not me ready for this and not ready for this. Civil rights movement or LGBTQ movement? Oh, God.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about, but I'm not going to speak to it because I don't want the community to come after.
Baynard Rustin, African-American leader in social rights for civil rights. And nonviolence and gay rights. Colman Domingo. He's been hyping this up. I've been reading about this for a while, so I think he's going to be a pick. I hope Jesse Plemons get another nomination for either Yorgos's film or Killers of the Flower Moon by Martin Scorsese. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
Can we see Mario sweeping the animated awards?
Maybe.
Chris Pratt?
I guess it'll probably be up against the Across the Spider-Verse. Did the first Across the Spider-Verse win Best Animated that year?
Yes, it did.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, if it didn't, it did deserve that.
Damn.
We have new Fincher coming as well.
Who? What?
A new Fincher film coming out with Tilda Swinton and Michael Fassbender. Yeah, that's
true. Killer.
And Tilda Swinton in new Wes Anderson movie. Asteroid City coming
this
summer.
There's two Wes Anderson movies.
Yeah, Wes Anderson has two.
Ooh, when was the last time we had someone going up against themselves in like a major category? Like,
I mean, Steven Soderbergh, right?
I googled this the other day.
Soderbergh was nominated against himself for Aaron Brockovich in Traffic, and I think he won for Traffic.
He did. Right?
Yeah. Wild, crazy. What else has he been doing? Magic Mike 3? Come on.
He made my favorite movie of 2020, so I will always love him.
Wait, what came out? No Sudden Move? No,
Let Them All Talk with Meryl and Diane Wiest. And
that's a Soderbergh movie?
That's a Soderbergh film, yeah. Yeah.
I am in space.
I also have high hopes for the Dune sequel because I feel like the first one, everyone acknowledged, like, okay, it did it, but it's still just half a story. Can't award this yet. If they fuck up the second half, it's going to forever be an unsatisfying film. But if part two pulls it off, I don't know. Could be a big year for
it. Austin Butler. I don't know that it will win awards kind of things, but
nominations.
I will say that it is like the type of movie that excites me. I'm so excited to see that movie.
Popcorn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't popcorn. Wait for yeah, it.
You know, like I'll go into a movie theater and risk COVID and for that one.
I remember Rod and I watched it at TIFF with no popcorn.
COVID alert at that movie.
We got
remember?
COVID alert too. Yeah. Crazy times. Crazy times.
We'll finally find out. You know, out just if, before we end, Austin drops the accent. Sorry, in Dune 2, we'll just find out.
Oh, God.
Did you guys see Vanessa Hudgens just like avoid
walk past him? Buddy, they were together for like 11, 12 years. It was wild.
And she then convinced him to do, like, she made this a reality for him. She manifested it for him.
That's crazy.
It's wild.
That's why he just before we go, what happened to Lucas Hedges? Sorry, I'm looking up Let Them All Talk. I was looking at Lucas Hedges. Where is this man? What's he doing?
I do not know who Lucas Hedges is, so I will tell you what happened to him is he never was a thing, apparently. But
oh my God.
Who are we talking about?
No, Lucas the Hedges? Disrespect. Well, I don't know if Lucas Hedges, again,
our
I don't want to speak.
Queer actor.
I don't think Lucas Hedges might go by man anymore. Like, I don't think that that's their pronouns. Yeah.
Oh.
So I think that's why they're my out fault. Of the spotlight because the last time they were seen with Tommy I can't remember their last name Tommy Dorfman, and they were like sort of experimenting with non-binary type
roles. Interesting
and that was the last time they were seen, so I think that Lucas Hedges will come back, but I just don't know if it's gonna be the Lucas Hedges we knew. sort of thing.
I'm sorry, Lucas.
Love that.
Yeah. Film. Yeah.
But I think that's it, folks. I mean, we could go on forever, but Jordan's going to prevent us from going on forever.
No, you're doing a great job of wrapping us up.
For too long. Like,
this is, I think this is a satisfying hour that we've given our listeners with a surprise episode.
I think
there.
We covered a lot. I think we covered a lot. We got through a lot. And again, everyone here at Layered Butter, thank you guys for hanging out with us. And Andrew Fry, thank you so much for being a part of this, as always.
Thank you again for having me. Thank you, guys.
How did we wrap this up before? I mean,
well, we used to talk about the next episode, but we can't talk about that. We can say, share some socials. Andrew, please share with our listeners. How should people find you online or in person?
You can find me open to that invitation. Well, yeah,
as I have told people, they can try to find me in Guelph, but I don't want them to actually try to find me. So, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, don't try and find me in person unless you message me first, and then we can set up a time to meet. But you can find me on Letterboxd or Twitter, on Instagram at It's Andrew Fry.
And Rod, where can we find you, bud?
You can find me on TV Time. You can find me on Board Game Geek. You can find me on Instagram, on all these things. I'm R Cockting everywhere, except on Facebook, which I finally deleted. So, yeah, you can find me wherever you want.
Cheers to
And you guys can
Facebook.
Find me.
Sorry, go ahead, Raph. Where can people find you?
No, it's okay. You don't need to find me. But you can find me everywhere at J. Rafael Cordero. And that's it. Thank you, folks. Thanks for listening. And if we have something important to say, you'll hear from us. But for now, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.